the relationship between the horse and the rider ends up being a very amazing connection. And when I can work with the horse and the rider, epiphanies and breakthroughs tend to kind of happen.
Welcome to the Equine Body Talks podcast. We'll be diving into the equine industry from the lens of a body worker, talking to other equine professionals and discussing scenarios around soft tissue work for all equine athletes. I'm Kim Krebs, your host. I've been working for over 2 decades in this industry as a loper, barn manager, and body worker. With the many horses I've worked with in all of these capacities, it has driven me to want to continually find out the why and the hows of equine biomechanics, health, and performance. My mentor and one of our industry's leaders, Tina Watkins of In-Hand Equine Therapy, will also be sharing hosting duties with me. Tina has been an equestrian her entire life and has dedicated the last 25 years to bringing bodywork forward as a professional career through her business, as well as education and teaching of future and current bodyworkers. This podcast is dedicated to opening the conversation around equine wellness, diving deeper into the whole body approach for equine performance horses. A hot button issue in the world of bodywork. Today, we're going to tackle the topic of chiropractics. Last year, we had a great conversation with Dr. Sarah Peterson on this subject. She spoke as an equine veterinarian who has her certification as a veterinary spinal manipulation therapist. She gave us the ins and outs of what, in our province of Alberta, is regulated for the field of equine chiropractics. Similar regulations apply throughout North America and other countries. If you haven't already listened to it, I highly recommend that you go back to episode number 8, titled Dr. Sarah Peterson, Scope of Practice. But today, we're going to look at the second type of practitioner, regulated under the ABVMA, to work within the world of equine and canine chiropractics, the human doctor of chiropractics, who has attained additional certification for our quadruped partners. Our guest today is a well-established human DC who has a unique perspective on working with horses in combination with their riders. Born and raised in central Alberta, Dr. Blaine Bug practices from the Calgary Centre for Health, a clinic that has multiple modalities to help people, from chiropractics, massage, acupuncture, and traditional Chinese medicine. Dr. Bug has been a chiropractor in good standing with multiple chiropractic associations since his graduation in 1996 and attained his AVCA for animal chiropractics in 2004 from the Parker College of Chiropractic in Dallas, Texas. He has multiple continuing education courses from exercise physiology, whiplash evaluation, and treatment, postural analysis, and many, many more. Most notably, he has been a treating chiropractor for the Calgary Flames hockey team, the University of Calgary rowing team, and the Canadian Pro Rodeo sports medicine team, of which he has also been on the board and now serving as president. So to say he is qualified to speak on the subject is a bit of an understatement. Well, who is regulated to practice chiropractics is a topic around the world that raises many opinions. The conversation that Dr. Bug had with Tina is going to shed a lot of light onto the subject of why it is important to have a qualified individual involved in spinal manipulation of any vertebrate. Our goal is to, as always, open the conversation around equine wellness, and we hope that those listening will take into consideration all that Dr. Bug has to say. Gaining more understanding around this modality and the regulations surrounding it, as well as the interplay of horse and rider biomechanics.
Well, thank you, Dr. Bug, for coming on with us today. We're really excited to have you. I think this is going to be a really neat conversation because you look at the world from both the human aspect and the horse aspect. So why don't we start right away with, you know, what you do and the services you provide?
Well, for all the listeners, thanks, everybody, Kim, Tina, for having me on. I'm a human chiropractor by trade. That's my regulated profession. And I kind of get drawn or pulled into the equine and the canine chiropractic world. And the world is pretty interesting because you can take the biomechanics and you can take the fundamentals of the nervous system from both of the, or all three of the mammals, and you can kind of see the parallels. So I'm pretty fortunate being able to take my two-legged perspective and being able to draw it into the four-legged world. I know that you guys have had some guests in the past, some veterinarians that have taken chiropractic training. So I think your guests are pretty familiar with most of the, how the playing field works. Maybe going back a little bit into my history, I can kind of give you the exciting diatribe of how I've gotten to where I'm at today. And that was as about an 8-year-old kid, I decided I wanted to be a chiropractor. And that was because my father did some rather fun things to himself. He always loved extremely powerful horses, and he'd take them into very unique circumstances like the mountains, and the wrecks would happen. So he'd pile himself up. And in the same time, the horses didn't fare so well either. So when he ran into some issues, he looked for solutions. And since chiropractic worked for him, he just dragged the town chiropractor out to the property and said, "You're not leaving until it's fixed." So here's a lay person, like a chiropractor that's trained only for two-leggeds, that got put in a pretty awkward situation. But guess what? Went back to the library, looked through the zoology texts, did some comparative anatomy analysis, and he kind of just fumbled his way through. And guess what? He saw some success. So an idea was born in my head that I wanted to be able to help the two-legged and the four-legged. And so when I went through chiropractic college, I found one of the original board members for the AVCA, which I think Dr. Peterson would have talked about on one of your previous podcasts. And I used my last name to its advantage. I harassed him. I bugged him until he showed me absolutely everything he could. And that kind of goes with my ranch upbringing, which is kind of more of the European model, which is learn from a mentor. You know, that whole Paris hotel where the concierge trains someone for 5 years before they can talk to the guest. Well, that's kind of what I felt I was being groomed into, because this individual, he was kind of a crusty, surly gentleman, and probably why he didn't want to work on two-leggeds anymore. But he did show me everything he wanted, showed me everything I could soak up. So when I became a human chiropractor in Alberta, before I knew it, I was kind of getting dragged into cases. And as Tina knows, the concept of learning never really ends. You kind of start on one end of the spectrum, and the evolution takes you in a lot of really unique places, sometimes back to the same spot, and other times you end up several paces in a different direction. So we have an amazing amount of phenomenal vets in the Southern Alberta, Central Alberta area that have been over the last 25 years a great encouraging group. When they've kind of realized that maybe there's a horse that has a biomechanical issue that is outside of their pathological realm, they've been very open to individuals like myself and Tina to coming in, share our thoughts, our ideas. And I think we've done a lot of good, and it's been from a collaborative, integrative process. So I did go back and take my AVCA course in 2003-04. Hoping that was going to be another just fundamental leap in my learning process. I got to work with some amazing minds, but what I did learn is that Dr. Gleason gave me a pretty good foundation. There was some details, there was some really neat theories, but I kind of had the comfort that I was on the right path. In fact, I think by the halfway through the first day, they had me on a teaching role. And I ended up kind of still doing the whole program as a student, but every time we turned around, they're like, "Well, you've done the most work out of all of us. What have you found?" And Tina, you've probably found that you try and go as a student with your 25 years in the industry, and next thing you know, you're kind of getting brought in, and it's amazing to be able to share, but you're not just being the sponge in that situation. So I got a great think tank. Anytime I run across a difficult case, I call Dr. O in Salinas, Texas, and we have a good chin wag. And then it helps me kind of go back into the world here and have some more collaborative information. So that's kind of where it started. And that's kind of where I'm at today.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And you mentioned several times, you know, that the team approach and looking at other individuals and working together. And I think with yourself and myself working together in the past, that's the big thing about you is you're really interested in knowing all aspects of the horse, which is really why we wanted to have you come on, because I don't think people really realize maybe what their biomechanics is doing to the horse. And that's where you have that really unique perspective. Is there things that you see really regularly that in a horse rider combo that maybe you get a chance to work on both individuals that kind of come into play, or that you could give some light to people if they're thinking about their own body and what it's doing to the horse?
You know, that's such a great point. What I believe is people don't recognize how much of a empathic creature a horse is. You have a individual that spends enough time with a horse, and that horse morphologically kind of takes on whatever problems that rider has. If they're dealing with a fixated, irritated, cranky hip versus maybe a knee that they might have blown out earlier in their life, maybe some shoulder and upper back tension from being stuck at a computer most of the day, it's amazing how the horses actually start to emulate some of those same restrictions. And, you know, I think for the really linear, pragmatic individual, it's, they kind of look at you and go, how does that happen? But the relationship between the horse and the rider ends up being a very amazing connection. And when I can work with the horse and the rider, epiphanies and breakthroughs tend to kind of happen, because without it, sometimes the same things might cycle back, and you and I might be working on a horse and we get rid of some of the fixations and build up some of the strength or some of the deficits that might be there. And then next thing you know, it kind of comes back and they start asking the question why, and we kind of almost have to kind of look in the mirror and realize that they need to take care of themselves in order for their horse to reach their optimum.
Yeah, that's such a great point, Doc. And so just to dive in a little bit more to what you do, now you work with a lot of high-level rodeo competitors. Tell us a little bit about how, you know, when you, how you kind of got into that industry and what you're doing to try to help that level of athlete.
The rodeo, like, I come from a ranching kind of background. I had a great uncle that could stampede during the 30s. Rodeos happened on our property. Like I said, my dad maybe didn't have the greatest choices in his horses, so he always had too much horsepower for whatever he was trying to accomplish. I kind of early on decided that maybe I'll help fix the people that wanted to rodeo rather than do it myself. It was just kind of more of a natural progression, I guess. Being involved in a sport med capacity with rodeo, I'm able to see what the athlete goes through, and then being able to try and help unravel. And I do find myself looking as much on at the stock as I do at the actual rider. And especially in the timed events where it is a coordinated effort between the rider and the equine on what they're trying to accomplish, a little different than the rough stock where they're kind of competing against each other on who can get the best of each other. And the high level rodeo stuff, I guess deep down, I kind of feel that rodeo athletes are kind of the modern day gladiator. They're the last one. They pay to play. They go down the road, they do everything themselves. And when that chute cracks or they nod their head, it's them that's competing. It's, they got themselves there and they're competing for the love of it, the thrill of it, the historic component. And it's, I guess you just, I couldn't help but kind of want to assist in that process.
And do you find that level of competitor has different problems than, like, for instance, some of the show jumping guys that you and I work on together? Or do you find that biomechanics is biomechanics? Like, if there's something gone wrong, like you mentioned the word deficit, which I love that word because it really allows people to understand that there can still be some change happen. Do you find that there's things that are kind of specific, or is it just really about what's happening with the individual?
You found an interesting point there. And when rodeo goes well, it would be the same like the show jumping. And the show jumping, when it goes well, it's graceful and it's amazing. But when things go wrong, it's kind of like a rodeo. So the concept is it kind of has to do with either the cumulative forces that build up slowly over time, which is going to be the rider's postural setup, the horse's conformation and postural setup. And then it's going to be adding the massive amount of forces that are going to come in a short amount of time when wrecks happen, when things go wrong, whether it's the footing, the communication maybe between the rider and the equine when they're in the show jumping arena, or it could be just, you know, it's horses. Like things can happen. Like they can shy away from an imaginary rock bear, even though they've passed that area of the arena 1,000 times. Those same kind of wrecks happen in the rodeo arena. So I would say you'd have the buildup of slow forces as a biomechanical issue, or there is just the fact that we are dealing with animals that are 100 times larger than us, or 10 times, sorry, and just the forces that end up entering the human and the equine athlete end up being pretty significant.
Yeah, great point. Now, we can kind of all visualize those big wrecks that happen. Let's talk, though, about everyday stuff, because I think that's where things really slowly start to change. And because they change so slowly, maybe most of us start to think that that gets to be our new normal. Like the horse is a little bit stiff to one side, we're a little bit stiff to the other side. And people kind of just, they pass that off. They think, oh, well, you know, that's just how I am, or that's just how the horse is. Can you speak a little bit to that? Because I think some of the funnest cases that you and I have worked on are really about looking at, you know, kind of getting back to true symmetry. And I really think that people need to understand how to get out of that thought process of that new normal.
The fact that it takes that slow buildup, like every rider that I talk to, they talk about their great rides. And then they talk about the things that are kind of maybe the creeping in of the not so great rides. They talk about whether they're using their trainer or their coach, that they're like, oh yeah, we're having trouble with this. And it's, as you said, Tina, it's kind of a slow build. So there's always reasons for it. If you ever hear that thought process between rider and trainer or rider and coach, they're trying to get to the bottom of it, but a lot of times they are kind of sometimes making excuses for what is familiar to them. I think our perspective is we start to see, well, look, they're short strided on that front left. Oh, look at that. Their head's bobbing. Oh, when they go around the corner, they're starting to point their nose or their pole in one direction. Look, there's a tail swish when they switch gates. We see those as signs of discomfort and the horse not being able to kind of do what they want. I think it would be so easy for the riders just to be able to go, oh, well, that's my normal personality in my horse, or that's a collection of these not so great rides that have just been building up. So if I have answered your question, I think you and I get a chance to see kind of those fundamental imbalances, whereas it's very easy for the rider when they're under saddle to just make an excuse for that's the way things are.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So you had just mentioned a couple of your assessment things that you look at. I think that'd be a great thing to go into next. Would you be able to give us a little bit of an idea if you came out to see, let's do it on both sides, if you don't mind. Okay. If someone comes to you as a human, we'll start there. What do you look at when they come to your chiropractor office?
The human is, it's kind of nice. We're a regulated healthcare profession. So they actually tell me what I have to do and how I have to go about it. So we do a strong history, and it's going to be everything that individual thinks might be relevant. And then I have to draw out things that they don't think are relevant. And that's going back into their family history. That's going to be any type of symptom that can, may not even seem like it's in the musculoskeletal realm. And once we get through that stage, then we get into the physical exam. And that's where, like, posture for a chiropractor, for an osteopath, for yourself as a body worker, like that, we get that first impression right away. And so we're looking at if the person holds their head forward, if their shoulders are rolled, if their hips or pelvis are in a neutral or in a tilted position, do they put their weight in on through the legs the same? Do they carry one arm or shoulder different than the other? These type of imbalances, when trained, you pick up quite quickly. We have a posture assessment with cameras, which then go into a digital software, and it puts out all these amazing physics numbers. So all of a sudden you're getting gravity, force vectors, alignment issues, and you can use science as much as you want. I'm still a little bit old school in the fact that I like to take that mental picture, and then you move through ranges of motion, like things that are supposed to be a normal range. We know for every single level, every single body part. Well, how does that match up? Is there deficits? Is there compensations in the fact that they maybe move further one way than they're supposed to because they've had to find a way to compensate in another way? Then these things that are attached to my arms, these hands, they're the things that I have to trust the most. I physically start getting in there. It's called palpation. You kind of, like a piano tuner is going to push on the keys of the piano. They're going to kind of have a feel for what's moving in comparison to the other. And then how does that reverberate into a sound change in a piano? Well, we're trained to kind of pick up those nuances and movement as well. Once we move from there, then there's always some orthopedic tests. Like those are the things that are going to rule in and rule out pathology. Those are the things where I think we find common ground with our veterinarian counterparts is they're coming from that pathological world. And that's where the biomechanics and the pathological world kind of meet. Then from there, you get a clinical picture and then you start to look at that, trying to come it back, bring it back to a normal or a new symmetrical or balanced position. And I haven't gone through a postural exam in 25 years where someone, once these things are pointed out, go, wow, I didn't know that. Or I didn't see this. Or now that you mention it, my spouse has mentioned that I kind of hunch, or I have that Aunt Betty that has that Dowager's hump in her back and I don't want that. They start to pick it up once we start to isolate those. Now you move that into the equine and we have the exact same thing. My history, and it's probably the same with you, Tina, is I listen to the owner slash rider. I listen to what they've come up with. And usually in their storyline on what they're having trouble with, whether it's lead changes or they're going through the different gait patterns, or like they tell us what the deficit is. And then we start looking at the horse. And pretty soon that clinical picture hopefully overlays.
And because you've got one set of glasses that's looking at bipeds and one set of glasses that's looking at quadrupeds, do you have to really change your assessment eye? Or really, because, you know, the anatomy is pretty similar other than being flopped down on the four legs, does it really equate together?
Once you kind of pick up the nuances between, I love the way you just said, once you just kind of take the biped and put them on all fours. Once you look at those slight nuances, it kind of comes to life. I wish people had tails. Some, I think, probably maybe do, because you know that the tail is a powerful tool for us, especially when we're working with the back end of a horse. But I don't get a chance to distract the low back of an individual because I can't find a tail. So I guess the nuances are there, but really when you're looking at movement, and I love educating the owners and riders as we go along, because you probably find that's the most important process that we come along with, because our treatment is going to have a certain amount of longevity. It's going to have a certain amount of hold, if you want to use that word. But if we can educate the riders and the owners and those that are going to be taking care of the horse, they start to see what we're trying to accomplish and they can take that momentum. And with the rehab or their proper riding techniques, because they might realize they're really heavy on one side because they're imbalanced. And yeah, maybe they're not going to run off to a chiropractor or physio or massage therapist or body worker to get themselves taken care of. Maybe they can't, or maybe they have some stuff that's they physically can't work on, but they can be aware of that in their riding to try and create that balance for those imbalances that we see in the horse.
You had said that some people don't think things are important. And when you said that, are you saying like little things, like for instance, maybe like tummy upset might have something to do with what's going on in your nervous system interruption because there's something in your spine? Can you elaborate on that just a little bit?
Absolutely. The way that our spine works is it houses our spinal cord, and our spinal cord then is the network and the where the nervous system branches out and goes to every single cell, organ, muscle, and it controls everything. And there's a two-way communication. There's leaving the spine to communicate with the cells and the structures, and that includes the organs and the muscles and anything you can think of. And then there's the feedback back to the spine. So as soon as you start to get areas of concern, areas of irritation in that normal spinal function, you can have a whole myriad of symptomatology. Now, this is where we really end up in Alberta, having to have that wonderful relationship with our doctors and veterinarian and anybody that's working in biomechanics, because I can identify an area that's not functioning properly and it has a spinal correlation. But I can start to pick up that it's also having a what they would call a visceral somatic issue, which means that mechanical issue is through the nervous system starting to have issues with the organ function, which now that is 100% into the scope of our veterinarians. So like I can address the biomechanics, but I have to alert the owner, the rider, that they have to work with their veterinarian to be able to address that visceral side of the puzzle. So now if sometimes you and I can come into a case, Tina, where they've had these ongoing visceral issues. Like, let's talk about something that's pretty common, like, which is ulcers. There's certain breeds of horses that tend to have more of a nervous subset. They're just your nervous Nellies. They, whether it's the show ring or whether it's just around other, whether it's around their herd counterparts or whether it's just change or the vibe in the barn, they just get themselves so wound up that they create this type of visceral problem. Well, a lot of times I'll find a biomechanical issue in the spine that can correlate to that. But I know that, like, I can take care of that, but the veterinarians and the owners have to be involved to be able to kind of handle it from that other side. That's where the marriage of the different professions can really come together. Can I adjust an area and it can help it for a while? You betcha. Can they prescribe a medication that can start to heal that area? And then we can come in and help with the biomechanical damage or collateral issues that have been caused by the viscera causing spinal imbalances? You betcha. You decide which end that you want to start with, but that's what's great about Alberta and the vets wanting to work with all of these other professions is they know their realm awesome, and they hopefully they can start to pick up these cases where we can come in and help from the other side.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant point. I think people should think about that more because oftentimes they think of chiropractic as just my horse is sore or my horse is locked up and I'm going to get the chiropractor versus really thinking that, you know, it is going to change the whole holistic function of my horse. And if there is something that's been going on with that horse, that is going to equate back to a place that is locked up in the body. So do you often say to your clients, oh, well, if there's something been going on that you're working on with the veterinarian or even farrier or other professional, do you often ask them then to kind of give you feedback as to what change happens in those other areas?
Absolutely. And I think it's just such a natural in my human practice and then in the sport med world and rodeo, because the skill sets that are needed at different times are so different. Like, if chiropractic isn't necessary today, could there be room for it a few weeks down the road or a month down the road? You betcha. So I do find that sometimes the owners or the riders are, they're looking for that the magic thing. They're looking for the one thing that's going to just make their horse perfectly sound, perform to its optimum. And I'm letting them know that it's more of a recipe. That's where that relationship with the farrier, like, they get a farrier that gets on the, does some great work and gets on a great page with the horse's development. That works. And then it starts from there and goes up. So I'm always looking integrative. I'm always looking collaboratively. So I think once again, that goes back to that education component is in that history, a lot of the individuals that own horses, they've had to wade through this learning process of that they're the steward for the animal and they have to realize that they have to build their team around them. And they start with the vet and they start then with the farrier. They all of a sudden learn that they have to have an equine dentist involved. And then they have to learn the different things throughout the year that they have to do to be able to keep their horse healthy. And then if the performance drops or if they're having issues, all of a sudden they learn about our world. And then they start asking questions about, well, what's the difference between a chiropractor and an osteopath? And that's a wonderful question because we're actually kind of cousins. There was two best friends that developed the profession. So it's not either or, it's just some situations you might get better function out of one or the other. And then you throw something like acupuncture into the mix and that makes changes in a whole different world. So I find that first-time horse owners sometimes almost get overwhelmed and confused by all the different options. But once they kind of get through this first stage, the picture becomes clearer, especially, I hope, in our area, because so many of us, like yourself, Tina, and others, we're so collaborative that we kind of help these owners through this stage of understanding how to help the horse.
Yeah, that's super. What would a care protocol be if somebody is in sport? They're riding their horse 3 to 5 times a week. They're looking at maybe increasing to kind of the next level of exertion in their sport. What are some of your care protocols that you usually suggest to people?
Just like choices with human care, it's on the education of what are you trying to accomplish? When you're dealing with lameness issues and stuff, you have to get to the bottom of it. You don't want to try and push a horse through performance if they can't manifest that type of performance. So that's that urgent care where we're all putting on our thinking caps and we're trying to solve the issue. But I think what you're asking for is that next level of performance, which gets into, in human care, it's athletic performance care, it's preventative maintenance. These are the different things. Like when I work with an athlete, they're not talking to me about pain, discomfort, things that they can't do. They're talking about what they can do and how can they make it better? How can they get 5 more percent, 10 more percent? So what you're really asking for is probably what the treatment schedule for a potential chiropractic program or their massage, their body work. And I would say the horse is going to dictate a lot of that. You've come across them, Tina. There's some horse athletes that are not put together very well, and they somehow they manage to stay sound. They have hearts of warriors, and they can just keep going through those different levels of whatever the chosen discipline is. And those are the one in the millions, because most of them, they hit these fundamental glitches. So the conversation with the owners and the riders are more, hey, what can we do to try and stay ahead of problems, stay ahead of these imbalances, whether some of them are coming from you as the rider, some of them are coming from the composition of the horse. And it's more of a proactive treatment schedule. Maybe if I can put it in a bullet, if somebody's ever been under chiropractic care, they kind of feel that the chiropractors say, hey, let's get started at a couple times a week. And then maybe let's reduce to once a week. And then maybe let's reduce to once a month. You don't need that with horses. They hold chiropractic adjustments so much differently. It ends up being an ingredient in the recipe of everything else that you're doing with them. Just so you know, owners, your chiropractic bill shouldn't be large. A couple of adjustments to get through maybe these fundamental issues. And then you start moving more towards that maintenance or progressive performance type schedules. And that's the good news, because sometimes, unfortunately, there's some of the human patients, especially some of my rodeo counterparts, they're kind of stuck in a cycle of regular adjustments and tune-ups to keep themselves balanced. Whereas with the chiropractic adjustments, the right body work, creating that type of symmetry, you can get to a horse where chiropractic can be down to once a year, and it can be more like your dental checkup. And that's where I would love every horse to be.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. In there, you had mentioned just quickly about somebody maybe that is staying ahead of a problem versus waiting till a problem comes and then having to play catch up. Can you tell us a little bit about what does that do to the nervous system? If you're in sport and you're working and you're staying on top of things, you know, and your body's at a certain level of function, and then something happens and it might be a small insult, you know, and you get an imbalance, where is that line? Or can you describe to us kind of what the nervous system's doing to where, you know, the point where then now you're having to get ahead of it again?
The body after an injury has to go through basically three stages. The first one, everybody, if anybody's rolled an ankle, they know that the body goes into an inflammatory process. So you end up with swelling, the damage of the tissues. And during that damage of the tissues, your nervous system is heavily involved. People think it's all circulatory, but it's not, because the nervous system is picking up, oh my God, something's not right. Something's not right. And it's sending out all of these different chemicals. And that's why the swelling occurs, is because the nervous system has alerted it to it. Then it also starts to shut down some of the antagonists and agonists, which are the muscles that work together in order to provide certain movements. So it goes into that protective mode. So you have the initial grenade going off, so to speak. Then you have the body not wanting to kind of allow certain things to function. So that's a protective mode, kind of like a governor on a vehicle, but you try to push the gas pedal and it doesn't go any faster because someone said you shouldn't go that fast. And then it takes time for healing to occur, just like renos in your house. Anybody that's listening, have renos ever been done earlier than they forecasted? No, usually not. I think one of the most frustrating things with horse owners is, oh yeah, my horse is going to be on stall rest for 3 months, or my horse is going to be in a paddock just being a horse for a year. And it's because the nervous system needs time to go through those first two stages. Now, that third stage is recruitment, which means the nervous system's like, hey, I remember how to make everything function. Let's start doing this. So it starts running through these patterns. And I'm very fortunate as a chiropractor that I get to be able to sneak in, provide a chiropractic adjustment, which stimulates the nervous system. kind of like a hi, how are you? Or when you have apps frozen on your phone, what do? You shut down your apps or you hard reset your phone. You turn it off, turn it on. Like that's what every IT person tells you to do. Well, that secret says that's kind of what a chiropractor does. We do a reboot to the nervous system. Maybe it's just that segment, that peripheral nerve, that vertebral segment, and it starts to function and reboot and starts to function differently. Well, then that's where the field of body work comes in, because then you're seeing these imbalances that showed up during the inflammatory stage, the protective or splinting spasm stage, and then the how do I start functioning again recruitment stage. And I bet you, Tina, there's probably a lot of owners that like, what do you mean we have to go back two steps and go back to some fundamentals? My horse is already doing flying lead changes and is doing this and doing that. Well, yeah, they're doing it off of muscle memory, but they're doing it in an imbalanced state. And as they're trying to recruit in this third stage, bigger problems that are going to show up down the road. You know, your farrier is going to start talking to you a year down the road. We're getting abscesses popping out on this back hind, and we're getting total of frog issue. Like, I can't get these angles right. I don't know what's going on. And next thing you know, all of us are in there looking at it, and we're realizing that that recruitment stage, it kind of failed. Something didn't go right.
And I think that is really important that you brought that up, because how many clients have all of us had where you have somebody that says, oh yeah, they stumbled and went down, you know, after whatever it was, if it was jumping or running through the field, eventing, rodeo, but they're fine. They're absolutely fine. And it's not till 3 or 4 months later that something actually shows up that's then broken. And they think that it has nothing to do with each other, those two events. So could you maybe talk to us just a little bit about, you know, the importance of really recognizing those kind of insults to the body?
Let's take a little perspective of compensations. The human ability, because we have two legs, allows us to compensate a certain amount of time or certain ways. You know, you have that bad ankle. And then, you know, your opposite hip starts to give you a little problems when you drive too much. And then, you know, the other side of your neck will show up. Okay. I was told by that original AVCA board member doc that kind of taught me, he goes, humans have the ability to compensate on kind of a 1-to-1 ratio. However, quadrupeds have the ability to compensate at about 1,000-to-1 ratio. So, here, let me put it into an analogy. I'm playing my guitar and one of my strings is off key. That's one out of like 5 or 6 strings that's off. You can hear it and you can kind of get to it quite quickly because it's one part of the instrument. A horse is like listening to a 100-piece symphony orchestra. You got the horns, you got the strings, you got the drums, and one instrument is out of tune. A lot of times you can go without picking that up, but then over time, that one out of tune instrument is going to start gnawing, like it's going to start showing up more and more the more you listen. Now, do we see things differently? No, like in the situation of that analogy, Tina, you and I, we've trained our ears to pick up that instrument quicker. We've been able to pick it up during different times of the song, like, whoa, 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 something's not right. In a walk, they're presenting this way. In a trot, they're presenting this way. As they enter into a lope, they can't do it this way. So I think we have the ability to just be able to see or hear a little further into the picture than some other people have. And we try and bring them into it. And how many times have you been listening to something? You're like, oh, have you heard that part in the song? And you walk someone through and they're like, I hear it now. So I know I went a little off topic and I went into analogy land there, but that's about the one way to be able to explain it to the riders and the owners, is to really recognize that if something small shows up, they may not see it in their performance level or where they're taking their horse, but you add greater speed, greater height with the jumping, you expect different things in their gait in more of in more constricted type of postures, and it's going to show up more.
Right, right. And then we've got one more factor with the horse. We've got the rider balanced on the top of them.
We keep coming back to that, don't we?
Yeah.
So it's paramount that they have a certain amount of body awareness. Now, I also have to talk to a lot of owners and riders, and they're like, it's me. I'm screwing up my own horse. I'm the one that's out of balance. I'll never get them where they want to go. And we have to be able to realize that, you know what? You can find some middle ground if you're aware of it. And that's why I referred over the last 25 years to, you know, over to you saying, if you build up this area, if you can strengthen this top line different, they can handle those nuances that the rider's imbalance might throw at them. Just like a race car. Like, yes, they look under the hood, they check the tire pressures, everything is perfect, but they can still drive it at a very high level if one tire is 5 pounds of pressure less than the other. You just want to try and get as close to an optimum as you can to have the greatest performance brought out of that individual rider and that horse.
Right. And Doc, can you talk to us a little bit about gaining muscle on your horse and gaining strength? Sometimes, you know, you see these horses that when we look at them from our eyes, we really see some tight locations. We see that they're not gaining muscle. We see that that area is so constricted because it is, you know, holding the body together. And the rider says, but I'm working them, I'm doing these things. Can you just talk people through why or what's happening in the tissue when it won't build because it's just being held in such a restriction?
Not to go down the rabbit hole too far, but the muscle has multiple ways to function. And we all want optimum, which means you have great blood flow, you have nutrition going into the muscle cells, and you have toxins leaving it. Everything's great. But since muscles have two fundamental reasons, they're either there to move a joint or they're there to protect a joint. So the minute that fuse or that breaker switch gets flipped from optimum function to that secondary protection mechanism, the muscle starts to fail. And too much toxicity builds up in it, the nutrition that gets into the area or the circulation changes, and the muscle just can't function at its level. Now, as a chiropractor, I'm looking to see kind of making sure that the nervous system that sends the river system of nerve energy to that area is not impeded. So that's like making sure that when you go drive through Deerfoot, that there's not a collision or a traffic jam. If I'm able to make sure that that nerve function is as close to optimum as possible, then that muscle unit or that motor unit can work ideally. When we get into your realm, all of a sudden you recognize, why is this area spasming? Well, it's not a fundamental chiropractic issue. It's the fact that we can't get this muscle out of this protection side of things. And you and I take a step back and we realize that muscle can't function normally because it's taken over for two other areas that aren't even firing. So that's where we get back to balance. We get back to symmetry. We start to try and educate the owners and riders that this muscle here should be that much larger. And because it's not, this other one over here is compensating. And this is why we're losing stride length. This is why we're losing the ability to go from smoothly from one gait to the other. That's why they can't hold the lead. That's why they get into a behavioral pattern issue the minute that one of these patterns start to try and change. So if I've answered the question, it's we got to get all of these different muscle units that work together in their optimum state, not in a protective mechanism.
Yeah, that was perfect, Doc. That's super. So what kind of home care do you usually send home to your clients? I know it's case specific as far as specific exercises, but just in general, do you recommend that people are doing something regular with their horse to kind of assess what they see? Or what's your thought on people doing some home care?
I refer them to you. Think of it as kind of like a dentist. We all know that when we go to the dentist, whatever the problem's going on with our mouth, or even if we get a good checkup, we still get told there's certain things that we should be doing. Brushing your teeth, flossing your teeth, and the timing of it, right? Like, you don't brush your teeth at 6 o'clock at night, eat a whole bunch of food, eat a whole bunch of sweets, and then go to bed. It's been beaten into us that that's bad. So I guess some of the basic ones is back to that same comment that I made at the very start of the show, was the tail is a wonderful implement on a horse. When I can show people that actually kind of utilizing the tail as a little bit of a diagnostic tool, that they can pull on it a little bit safely, like once we educate them that, and recognize that as they watch the horse's movement, they can see the comfort in what the horse does when we add that little bit of traction, and getting them things to watch for, get them to watch how the glutes and the hamstrings, how they react to that type of activity. Does the horse hunch right up, look like a slinky and wants to rock it away from you? Guess what? Tina and I might have to roll in and do some more work. But if they start to see that, then the other thing is, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was in the 80s. There was that lady out of the States that taught everybody about carrot stretches. I always refer to it, and I should get my name correct, but ranges of motion. Like, yes, every owner treats their horse. We know it. Can you use that in order to check their range of motions? I let them know which ones are important to me as a chiropractor. The pole, magic button on a horse. If you only let me kind of work on one or two levels, I need to work on the pole. I need to balance it because everything, the nervous system kind of needs to function properly from there going back. Now, am I upper cervical only? Gosh, no. But that area, it does a lot. And there's a lot of conditions that can be whacked out if the pole can't be balanced correctly. So I show them how to move the head to watch for normal patterns. And then I let them see those kind of unnatural or compensatory patterns that a horse is going to do still comfortably. Once they know some of these basic stretches and range of motions and a little bit of how the body responds with the tail pull, and then I feel that they're kind of equipped to at least recognize those first stages of imbalances or deficits where they might need us to roll into the picture.
Perfect. Well, Doc, we have to ask you the whole elephant in the room. When you hear the word chiropractor and horse go together, we've got to address, why do people need to have a certified doctor of chiropractic or a veterinarian that has taken the certification course? Why is that so critical?
A lot of what we talked about initially is that there's some parallels, you know, and whether it's 70, 80, 90% similarity between human function and animal function. The fact is that 15 to 20% of difference is night and day. It's the difference between doing something that can help the horse or actually fundamentally hurt the horse. So yes, was my path just becoming a chiropractor, going to an AVCA program and a certified practitioner? No, I took a little bit of a different one, and I think I was able to explain it. And I think that's why I'm very humble in the fact that I know that it has to be a collaborative effort. But when you take just purely a layperson or a human chiropractor, there's dangers that can occur. And it kind of scares me to hear of some of the stuff that's out there. Do I believe, with me not being fully certified to the nth level of the scenario, that I'm a danger? No, I'm educated. I've done a lot of different things in order to be able to get a base knowledge that I understand the fundamentals of a quadruped. I work with vets regularly. In fact, you know, I'm regularly at some small animal clinics and doing that collaborative learning back and forth between the two professions. It's simple. You need to be able to vet what the person's education is and know that it has to be a significant amount of understanding between the professions, and know that they're going to be able to, when they work on the horse, have a percentage of assisting or helping and not hindering or hurting the animal.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you so much for addressing that, because I think there is a lot of people out there that they don't maybe even realize. It's not that they're, you know, bad horse owners. It's just that they don't even realize that there is a difference in the level of education. And I think it's really important that people start to ask those questions to the people that they're hiring to come to look at their horse. So Dr. Bug, I have to tell you, I love working with you, and I think people are going to love hearing all the information on this. How do they get a hold of you if they want to either have you out to look at their horse or maybe even have you look at themselves?
The best thing for me is probably through my human interface, which would be the website through the Calgary Center for Health. And that is calgary.spine.ca. They'll be able to kind of click on my mug and see my bio, and I think they can shoot an email from there, or they can call the center.
Is there anything else you want to add to the episode that we didn't get a chance to ask you?
I probably just want to add on to that, the subject that you kind of brought up about the elephant in the room, and recognizing that there are a lot of programs out there and they throw different words around. There's some massage schools that say that they teach chiropractic. Chiropractic is a regulated profession. I had to have a bachelor's degree and a four-year postgraduate in order to become a regulated chiropractor, which is a primary care provider for humans. And it's heavily regulated. When we get into the veterinarian world, it is regulated by our doctors of veterinarian medicine. That is the pinnacle of where they need to be able to start. Their veterinarians are going to know which individuals out there have the training, which kind of passes what they kind of say their eye test. I've walked into situations and it spooked me because they said, oh yeah, I've had my horse chiropractic or adjusted a lot. And I kind of found out that the practitioner learned two moves on a weekend course at a massage school in Oklahoma. And very scary. I believe that there's individuals, there's even some lay persons out there that have had lifetime learning in understanding of biomechanics, and they're out there and the veterinarians have a respect for the work that they do. And they may not have a certification that's up front and center, but they have a body of knowledge that is kind of proven through the test of time with their collaboration with the vets. And that's going to be a resource for them as well.
Great way to put it. Well, Dr. Bug, we can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast with us. I just love working with you, and I think everybody's really going to love to hear the information that you brought across to us today.
Thank you very much, Tina.
Well, we hope that this conversation has opened eyes into the field of chiropractics. As I was listening, I thought Dr. Bug did an amazing job of describing the intricacies around the nervous system and how far-reaching the effects can be felt. From not only just as a horse or as a rider, but as a combination of the two into a sport performance team. Chiropractics is a modality we refer to often as soft tissue body workers and is extremely effective, but it is very important and prudent to ensure the individuals you are referring clients to is someone qualified to do the work. The skeletal and nervous systems, while well designed for their intended purpose, can have catastrophic consequences to them when manipulated improperly. Never be afraid to ask for credentials and education certifications when finding individuals to work on your horse's wellness team. And that includes all individuals. Horses have no voice when choosing those that will be working on their bodies, so it's up to us as owners to ensure we coordinate the appropriate, qualified team members to support their well-being. And I think Dr. Bug really hit home as well when he addressed how important it is to not negate you as the rider when considering what is happening in your horse's body. Having your own wellness team support your structure and posture is a critical element to how well your horse is going to be able to increase its potential in sport. Thank you for listening to this episode. We appreciate each rating and review you can give to help grow this podcast. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook under Equine Body Talks, or connect with us by email at equinebodytalks@gmail.com. To learn more about courses by InHand Equine Therapy, please follow them on Instagram and Facebook as well, and their online course platform at inhandequinetherapy.podia.com. Remember to always be an advocate for your horse and not be afraid to open the conversation around your horse's wellness team.